My guest at this time is Stephen Ives. He's the writer and director of the new documentary, Custer's Last Stand. It chronicles the life and of the controversial and famed end of General Custer's distinguished military career at the Battle of Little Bighorn in 1876. He joins us now to talk about why this is an important figure in American history and what lessons perhaps can still be learned from his time in the armed forces today. And Stephen, thank you very much for being with us.
My pleasure, Greg.
What fascinated you so much about General Custer that you decided to devote so much time and effort to put together this documentary?
Well, I made a series about the American West back in the 90s, and I was always fascinated by Custer. He was such a larger-than-life figure and seemed to sort of, in so many ways, personify what the American Western experience was all about. And then a great writer, Nathaniel Philbrick, came up with a new book about a year ago called The Last Stand, which kind of shed some new light on some of the inner relationships between Custer and his wife and Custer and his senior officers. And I just felt like it was time for a kind of a new biography that tried to dig underneath the layers of myth and kind of glory that had been pasted onto this figure and see if we could get a sense of who the man was underneath it all.
Most school kids know how Custer's life and his military career ended. Deeper students will know that he was obviously a hero in the Civil War and rapidly rose through the ranks. Talk about, first of all, what made him such a phenomenon during and immediately following the Civil War.
Well, that's an important thing to understand about his career, is that he really was this phenomenal figure. He was known as the Boy General. He graduated from West Point just in time to fight in the First Battle of Bull Run, and he was in almost every conceivable violent engagement after that for the next 5 years, and helped accept the surrender of Robert E. Lee at Appomattox. And throughout it all, he was barely scratched, despite leading incredible cavalry charges, in particular a famous one that helped win the Battle of Gettysburg. And he began to believe, I think, that he had this thing called Custer's luck, this sort of ability to somehow emerge unscathed from these incredible dangerous encounters. And that led to a real sense that he was destined for greatness, that there was a role for him to play on the national stage that was heroic and prominent. And all of his life after that, I think he spent trying to remain Custer, to stay that red-hot, famous figure that was charismatic and that captured the imagination of his country.
So he definitely enjoyed the hype and seems like he looked to fan the flames of it, too.
Yeah, he was like, in a way, he was one of our first sort of media superstars in the sense that he was one of the most photographed men of the 19th century. He self-consciously dressed himself in this fabulous outfit with these huge hats and this scarlet neckerchief, and he would grow his hair long and perfume it with cinnamon oil, and you know, he had gold braid all over his velvet jacket. I mean, some people would say that he looked like a circus performer when he would ride up, but he really had a way of being noticed and of cultivating an image, and that was a very modern and very kind of familiar role that he played. And he played it beautifully, and he knew how to cultivate the media. Whenever he went on expeditions, he would often bring two or three reporters along. He wrote his dispatches and his reports very much with an eye that they would be excerpted and printed in the newspapers, which they were. And he really cultivated this air of the hero. And he played it to the hilt and was incredibly successful at it.
Did that in any way compromise, since he spent so much time on that, compromise his men, his missions? We obviously know what happened with the last one, but did he make things more difficult because of the publicity that he seemed to be very concerned with?
Well, he has this critical relationship with Major Marcus Reno and Captain Frederick Benteen in his regiment, and it's a tortured, almost Shakespearean triangle of deceit and mistrust and anger and hatred, and a lot of it is fueled by Custer's arrogance, his obvious interest in promoting himself at the expense of others, and most directly, the fact that he left some men for dead on the battlefield at the Battle of the Washita in 1868, an act that you ask any Marine today, they'll tell you is completely unforgivable. And some of his senior officers never forgave him for that transgression, and it came back to haunt him at the Battle of the Little Bighorn.
You mentioned his interesting relationship with other officers. Today we see military leaders, of course, pretty bland in how they make their statements. They're obviously very competent. They command respect, but you don't necessarily have the flamboyant personalities that you did in the days of General Custer. You did have some subsequent to that with General MacArthur and so forth. But what do you see as the parallels between Custer and today in terms of the military, and what are the biggest differences?
Well, I mean, there was no CNN back then. There was no 24-hour news cycle. So you had to create your own buzz. You know, you had to create your own sense of a theatrical persona, and in the Civil War in particular, everyone you led from the front. You know, you rallied your men with a theatrical ability to sort of capture people's imagination, and that's what Custer excelled at. And I think he what was different was that his cavalry officers, when he later was out west, were all about trying to win the decisive victory. After the Civil War, there were tens of thousands of officers that had been downgraded, and the only way you were going to survive and shine in the military was to win decisive battles. And so what's interesting about the officers of Custer's day is they would get out in front, and they would have their orders, but if they thought they could win a big victory, they would throw their orders away and go for it. And Custer basically did that at the Little Bighorn, and it ended up having tragic consequences. But he was very much looking for the great final decisive stroke in his career that would win him undying fame and glory, and he ended up getting all of that posthumously, of course.
Stephen, this is fascinating stuff. Thanks so much for being with us today.
Thank you, Greg. I enjoyed it.
Stephen Ives is the writer and director of Custer's Last Stand, a brand-new two-hour documentary that premiered earlier this week on PBS, and its American Experience feature. Check your local listings for when it might be airing again near you. I'm Greg Corumbus, reporting for Radio America.